Have you ever just, you know, reached for your coffee or even just blinked and thought, how does that actually happen so easily?
It seems simple on the surface, doesn't it?
Yeah, totally effortless. But what's going on, like, deep down at the cellular level?
Well, that's exactly what we're diving into today. It's this incredible biological machine, the human muscular system.
And we're drawing insights straight from Dr. Ty-C.M. Hoffman's lectures, right?
Exactly. Our mission, really, is to unpack all those fascinating details, how muscles work from the big picture right down to the tiny molecular stuff.
And how they let us, you know, interact with everything around us.
Precisely. So let's start with the obvious. When we think muscles.
Movement. Lifting, walking, grabbing things, pulling on bones.
That's the primary function, sure. But Dr. Hoffman really emphasized that there's more to it.
Oh, yeah, way more. It's not just about, like, flexing your biceps.
Right. He highlighted two other crucial functions. First up, protection.
Ah, yes. Like the muscles in your abdomen.
Exactly. Those layers of muscle in the front, they act like a living shield for your internal organs, your viscera.
A flexible shield, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah, it's dynamic. And then the second one, the one that's maybe less obvious.
Thermogenesis, heat production.
You got it. When you get cold, what happens?
You shiver. Uncontrollably sometimes.
Right. And that shivering, Dr. Hoffman explained, is just uncoordinated muscle contractions. It's not about moving you anywhere.
It's about generating heat through friction, basically, keeping you warm.
Exactly. Maintaining that crucial internal temperature homeostasis. It's pretty amazing.
It really is. Okay, so speaking of muscles, Dr. Hoffman made a really important point about the different types of muscle tissue.
Yeah, this is key. There are three: skeletal, cardiac, and smooth muscle.
But, and this is the kicker, only one of them is technically part of the muscular system we're talking about today.
That's right. When we say muscular system, we're talking specifically about skeletal muscle.
Yeah.
And, of course, the tendons that connect it to bone.
So, cardiac muscle, that's the heart.
Yep. Part of the circulatory system. Definitely not something you control consciously.
Thankfully. And smooth muscle.
That's found in, well, lots of other systems, primarily the digestive system, lining hollow organs, pushing food along.
Right, those slow, wave-like contractions.
Exactly. And Dr. Hoffman mentioned the uterus, too, using smooth muscle for childbirth. Essential stuff, but not part of the muscular system itself.
Got it. So, focusing on skeletal muscle, then, let's talk about the cells. Dr. Hoffman used a few names interchangeably, right?
Yeah, muscle cell, muscle fiber, myocyte.
Yeah.
Anything with myo or myocytes means muscle.
And structurally, these skeletal muscle cells, these myocytes, are quite different from, say, cardiac cells.
Oh, absolutely. Skeletal myocytes are these long cylindrical cells. They don't taper, they don't branch.
And they have multiple nuclei. That's wild.
It is. They form from multiple cells fusing together, which is why they can be so incredibly long, sometimes the entire length of the muscle. And they have those characteristic stripes, the striations.
Whereas cardiac muscle cells are also cylindrical and striated.
But they branch. And because of that branching, the striations aren't quite as perfectly lined up.
Okay, and here's something Dr. Hoffman really hammered home about all muscle.
The fundamental action.
Yes. The only thing any muscle can actively do is shorten.
Pull. That's it. They can't actively lengthen or push.
So to straighten your arm after bending it, your biceps doesn't push it straight.
Nope. Another muscle, like your triceps, have to pull it straight. Or gravity helps, or some other external force, they only actively pull.
Simple, but profound. Okay, so how is that pulling controlled? Big difference between the types here, too.
Huge difference. Skeletal muscle is unique in that it never contracts unless a nerve tells it to.
It has to be innervated, connected to a neuron.
Precisely. And it's with mostly under conscious control, even if we don't think about every single movement.
Unlike your heart.
Right. Cardiac muscle is autorhythmic. It beats all by itself, thanks to its internal pacemaker.
Though your nervous system can speed it up or slow it down, right?
Absolutely. Nerves and hormones modulate the rate and force, but they don't start the beat.
And smooth muscle, also autorhythmic.
Yes, but much, much slower. Think digestion slow, sustained waves of contraction over minutes, not seconds. You definitely don't have to think about that.
Thank goodness. Okay, so we have these individual pulling cells. How do they bundle together to make, say, a whole biceps muscle?
Dr. Hoffman used a brilliant analogy here. Think of a strong cable.
Okay, like an electrical cable or a suspension bridge cable.
Exactly. A whole muscle, like your biceps brachii, is structured just like that, bundles within bundles.
So the whole muscle is the main cable.
Right. And inside that, you have smaller bundles called fascicles.
Okay. Bundles within the main bundle.
Yep. And each fascicle is itself a bundle of the individual muscle cells, the myofibers, those long cells we talked about.
The ones that can run the whole length of the muscle.
That's them. But wait, there's more.
It goes deeper.
It does. Inside each myofiber, the cell, are even smaller bundles called myofibrils.
Okay, hold on. Myofiber is the cell. Myofibril is inside the cell.
Exactly. Myofibrils are organelles, like tiny power cords within the cell. They also run the whole length.
Wow, and inside the myofibril.
That's where we find the smallest level, the myofilaments. These are the actual protein strands.
Actin and myosin.
The very ones. Actin are the thin filaments, myosin are the thick filaments. That's the fundamental pulling machinery.
Incredible layers. And each layer is wrapped, right?
Yes. In connective tissue, the epimysium wraps the whole muscle.
Like upon or outer?
Correct. The paramecium wraps each fascicle.
Hmm.
Peri meaning around.
Okay.
And the endomysium wraps each individual myofiber, each muscle cell. Endo meaning within.
So these wrappings provide structure and kind of transmit the force.
Exactly. They help organize everything. And speaking of transmitting force, how do muscles connect to bones?
Tendons.
Right. And Dr. Hoffman highlighted what they're made of. Dense, regular connective tissue.
Dense meaning lots of fibers.
Uh-huh. And regular meaning.
The fibers all run in the same direction, parallel.
Perfect. Which makes tendons incredibly strong for pulling in that one direction. Ideal for connecting muscle to bone.
And he talked about the connection points too, origin and insertion.
Yes. The origin is the attachment point on the bone that stays relatively still.
Anchor point.
Sort of, yeah. And the insertion is on the bone that moves significantly when the muscle contracts.
Like his example of the brachialis muscle in the arm.
Right. Originates on the humerus, upper arm bone, inserts on the ulna, forearm bone. When it contracts.
The ulna moves, bending the elbow. The humerus stays put. Makes sense.
It's all about leverage.
Okay, quick comparison then. Speed of contraction. Which muscle type wins?
Skeletal muscle is the fastest, by far. And it has a huge range, from super quick reflexes to slow, controlled lifts.
And cardiac.
Slower than skeletal. Each beat is pretty consistent in speed, though the overall heart rate can change a lot.
And smooth muscle is the slowest.
Way slowest. Contracts gradually, over minutes sometimes. Perfect for things like digestion.
All right. So we've got the structure, the connections, but the magic is how they shorten. The sliding filament theory. This was mind-bending.
It really is elegant. Dr. Hoffman described myofibrils as being made of repeating units.
The sarcomeres, like train cars hooked together.
Exactly. And inside each sarcomere car, you have the myofilaments, actin, and myosin.
The thin actin anchored at the ends, the Z-discs.
Yep, the boundaries of the sarcomere.
Yeah.
And the thick myosin in the middle with those little heads sticking out.
And the huge insight from Dr. Hoffman was...
the filaments themselves don't get shorter.
Right. The muscle shortens because the actin and myosin filaments slide past each other, increasing their overlap.
Precisely. He used that great hand analogy, thumbs as Z-discs, fingers as filaments. As fingers overlap more, thumbs get closer.
Even though the fingers stay the same length? Brilliant.
It is. So how does this sliding actually get triggered? It starts with the nervous system.
The signal from a neuron. And Dr. Hoffman talked about the motor unit.
Yes, that's one motor neuron and all the muscle fibers it controls.
Could be just a few fibers for fine control, like in your fingers.
Or hundreds, even thousands, for big, powerful muscles like your thighs.
And when that one neuron fires...
all the muscle cells in its unit contract. All or nothing for that unit.
And that firing is an action potential, right? That electrical signal.
Yes, a rapid change in voltage across the cell membrane. Dr. Hoffman calls muscle and nerve tissue excitable tissues because they can generate and conduct these signals.
So the nerve's action potential travels down to its end. Mm. But there's a gap, right, between the nerve and the muscle.
There is. The snap to cleft, tiny gap.
How does the signal jump that gap?
Chemicals. When the nerve signal arrives, it triggers the release of a neurotransmitter called acetylcholine.
Okay.
Acetylcholine floats across the gap and binds to specific receptors on the muscle cell membrane, like a key fitting into a lock.
And when it binds, it unlocks something on the muscle cell.
Exactly. It opens channels, sodium ions rush into the muscle cell, and bam, a new action potential is generated, this time in the muscle cell.
And that electrical signal spreads over the whole muscle cell surface.
Yep. And that signal dives deep into the cell and triggers the release of...
calcium. From that internal storage tank, the sarcoplasmic reticulum.
You got it. Now, remember those actin filaments? They have binding sites for the myosin heads, but they're usually covered up.
By those regulatory proteins, Dr. Hoffman called them the purple proteins.
Huh. Yes, the purple proteins, troponin and tropomyosin, technically. They act like guards, blocking the binding sites.
So the muscle stays relaxed.
Right. But when calcium floods in,
it binds to those regulatory proteins.
And that binding makes them change shape and move out of the way.
Exposing the active sites on the actin.
Now the stage is set. The myosin heads, which are kind of spring-loaded with energy, can finally bind to the exposed actin sites.
Forming a crossbridge.
Yes. And as soon as they bind, they perform the power stroke. They pivot, pulling the actin filament toward the center of the sarcomere.
Like tiny oars rowing.
Good analogy. They pull, then detach, recock, grab the next spot on the actin, and pull again. Cycle repeats as long as calcium and energy are present.
And that collective pulling of all the sarcomeres shortens the entire muscle fiber.
And ultimately, the whole muscle. That's contraction at the molecular level.
Wow. So, thinking practically, what about muscle cramps? What did Dr. Hoffman say causes those?
He mentioned they're often due to ionic imbalances. Things like dehydration or electrolyte loss can mess with the membrane potentials, causing muscle cells to fire action potentials abnormally without a signal from the nerve.
Ah, so it's the muscle cell itself misfiring.
Usually, yes. Whereas a spasm...
That's different.
Slightly. A spasm is typically when the neuron fires unintentionally, sending an unwanted signal to the muscle.
Got it. Nerve issue versus muscle issue, broadly speaking.
Kind of, yeah. Okay, so let's zoom back out. Let's talk about the actual movements muscles create.
The actions. Dr. Hoffman mentioned antagonistic pairs, right? Muscles working in opposition.
Yeah, like biceps bends the elbow, triceps straightens it. And he cleared up that confusion about flexing.
Right. Flexing your muscle just means contracting it. But flexion, the action is specific.
Very specific. Flexion and extension usually happen in the sagittal plane dividing the body left and right.
Flexion decreases the angle of a joint, like bending your knee.
And extension increases the angle, straightening it out. Going beyond straight is hyperextension.
Okay. What else? Rotation?
Yep. Rotation, pivoting around an axis, like shaking your head. No, that's rotation between the top two vertebrae.
And then movements in the frontal plane dividing front and back.
That's abduction and adduction.
Abduction with a B is moving away from the midline, like raising your arm out to the side.
Exactly. Think abduct, like taking away. And adduction with D is moving toward the midline, adding it back to the body.
And that combo movement making circles?
Circumduction combines flexion, abduction, extension, and adduction in sequence, like drawing a circle with your arm.
Cool. What about specific foot movements? Dr. Hoffman detailed those.
Right. In the sagittal plane, dorsiflexion is lifting your foot, bringing toes towards your shin.
And plantar flexion is pointing your toes down, like standing on tiptoe.
Perfect. Then in the frontal plane for the foot, aversion is turning the sole of your foot outward, laterally.
And inversion is turning the sole inward, medially.
Which, as Dr. Hoffman noted, is how most ankle sprains happen, rolling the ankle inward too far.
Ouch. Okay, forearm movements. Pronation and...
Supination. Mm-hmm. This involves the radius bone rotating over the ulna.
Supination is palms facing forward or up, like holding a bowl of soup.
That's the classic mnemonic.
Yeah.
And pronation is palms facing backward or down, like pouring the soup out.
It's the forearm rotating, not just the wrist twisting.
Gee distinction. And finally, the amazing thumb.
Opposition, touching your thumb tip to any other fingertip.
That uniquely human grip capability. And the opposite is reposition, just putting it back.
So many precise actions. And Dr. Hoffman pointed out the names often give clues, right?
Yeah, the naming isn't totally random. Often based on location, shape, action, or attachments.
Like orbicularis oculi.
Orbicular circular. Oculi of the eye. The muscle circling your eye.
Masseter.
Muscle for mastication chewing. Connects cheekbone, zygomatic arch to jaw, mandible. Super strong.
Sternocleidomastoid sounds scary.
But it just lists its attachments.
Mm-hmm.
Sternum, clavicle, clido, and the mastoid process behind your ear.
Which Dr. Hoffman said means breast-like. Huh.
Apparently so. Then the deltoid, the shoulder muscle.
Shaped like a delta, a triangle.
Exactly. Pectoralis, major pectoralis means of the chest.
And he was very specific about biceps.
Yes. Biceps is singular. Biceps brachii means two heads, biceps of the arm.
Brachii, okay. Abs, rectus abdominis.
Rectus means straight. Its fibers run straight up and down, like in rectangle.
And external oblique.
Oblique means diagonal. Those fibers run diagonally, like a V shape. Great for twisting and protection.
What about that really long one in the leg, the sartorius?
Longest muscle. Runs diagonally across the thigh. nicknamed the Taylor's muscle.
Because it lets you sit cross-legged like Taylor's used to.
That's the story Dr. Hoffman shared. Then the big group on the front of the thigh. Quadriceps femoris.
Quad means four heads. Femoris means of the femur.
Right. A group. He named three. Rectus femoris, straight down the front. Vastus lateralis. Vastus means big. Lateral means side.
And vastus medialis, big on the inner side.
Correct. And finally, the calf muscle.
Gastrocnemius. Gastro meaning belly.
Yep. Refers to the bulging shape. Connects to the heel via the Achilles tendon. Causes plantar flexion, pointing your toes.
Wow. Okay, that was quite the tour. From overall functions down to the molecular sliding and back up to specific muscles and actions.
We covered a lot. The hierarchy, the control, the actual mechanism. It's incredibly intricate.
So what's the big takeaway? What does this mean for us just living our lives?
Well, I think it means appreciating the sheer elegance and complexity behind something we take totally for granted, movement.
Right. That simple act of reaching for coffee
is underpinned by this astonishing biological engineering. Dr. Hoffman's breakdown really turns abstract anatomy into something, well, awe-inspiring, doesn't it?
It really does. You realize how much of our conscious life, our ability to just be in the world, relies on these layers upon layers of unconscious, instantaneous molecular machinery.
Absolutely. All working perfectly most of the time without us giving it a second thought.
It definitely makes you wonder, what other simple things that we do every day are hiding that same level of profound complexity, just waiting for a closer look?
That's a great thought to end on.
Mm.
What else is going on just beneath the surface?